Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million. You didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million...
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world, and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Oh, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million.
Well, welcome back to Action Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. She's Miss Stephanie Koenig, back from her Hawaii trip. He's Mr. Matt Weber, right before his New York trip. I'll just be here all week. I'll just be here all the time. It's just okay with me. SP Futures down 550. Dow Futures down 85. NASDAQ Futures down 13. We have the U.S. Futures drop ahead of the open amid geopolitical developments. How's that for headline, Stephanie? What does that tell you? Nothing?
Yeah, nothing.
Today is the anniversary of 9/11. I think everybody can remember where they were when that happened. I certainly can. I suppose if you're old enough, you remember where you were when Kennedy got shot as well. I remember that as well. And 9/11 was I think everybody that was locked to was saw what happened and the whole thing played out was about as bad as it gets. Stephanie, where were you? Were you working, or were we? I mean, obviously, you were working. Were you at work? How quickly did you find out about it? Did you get to watch the whole thing, or to watch the whole thing? I don't know if that was a plus or not.
Yeah, I was checking trades over here at the CBO. I guess it was a CBOT building at that point, and watched the first one hit, and then watched the second one hit, and then pretty much we got evacuated. I don't know, about 30-40 minutes after that. So it was a horrible day. Horrible day.
We were in the office, and I remember the first one. They had all kinds of eyewitness accounts. This is what's always amazing about eyewitness accounts. I'm going to say 3/4 of the people said it was a private plane. And the eyewitness accounts, but from the street, all you heard was hear something.
Yep.
I mean, I don't think any of those people actually saw the plane hit. So they said they saw something. They thought it was a private plane, and then. It was a while before it was confirmed it was a jetliner, at least in the station I was listening to.
Yeah, I don't think anyone really ever... I think the original thought, at least on TV, that they kept announcing was that seemed like a private plane got out of control and hit the building, right?
Right.
So that was sort of the original thought, until they realized, obviously, that it wasn't.
Well, then when the second one hit, certainly confirmed that the first one wasn't.
Yeah, because I remember sitting there... after the first one, thinking, wow, somebody really screwed up. And then the second one hits, and it's like, no, this is intentional.
Yeah. Well, not a lot of people remember that was the second attempt to bring down one of those towers.
It sure was. I was in high school, and I lived in New York during the first one. So we were supposed to ditch school that day, actually, and go down to Manhattan and go play in Soho, buy ripped jeans and stuff back in the day. And... yeah, for some reason we didn't go. I don't know why, but that was the day that they tried and bombed it the first time.
So. It was a van that parked next to a girder downstairs, and it turns out it was the wrong girder or whatever, or the girder didn't blow or something happened. But
I think the bomb didn't go all the way off, so I think it only partially went off. But yeah,
a few people got hurt or killed, but it didn't. For those of you who are very brief, I will keep this. It was a very odd construction on that building. When you have a Again, this is not there's a Cliff Notes version. If you ever were in that building, it was really interesting. Except, were you ever in there?
Yeah, been in there a lot.
We ever up in the Windows of the World, my favorite place for a cocktail?
God, it was beautiful.
Oh, yeah?
View.
Does the new one have a place like that? It must.
I haven't been in the new one yet.
Is it open and people in there and offices working and everything? Or I have no idea what stage it's in.
Yeah, my understanding is it's complete. I'm not sure if all the floors are built out yet, but...
I know the building was. I didn't know if people were actually in there and restaurants open and that kind of stuff.
Last time I was there, it was open.
Okay. Well, anyway, one of the guys who was the head of Smith Barney on the trading floor, if you walked over as you probably noticed, it had an awful lot more outboard, outside beams than most buildings. It's very similar in construction to the Standard Oil building, which was the BP. What is it now? I don't even know what the name of the place is.
Is it the Aeon?
Aeon, yeah. It's a very similar structure. But most buildings, you have huge, you know, vertical support within the interior part of the building, which, of course, leaves you columns inside, which nobody wants. Well, you'd rather have a full floor. So other than the elevator towers in the middle, there was no supports inside. It was all on the skin. So the floors were actually attached to the outside girders instead of being supported as well from the inside. When you walked over to the edge, you could actually see the two girders, and they're probably, what do you say, Steph? 7-8 feet apart, maybe? Or 10? Yeah. Not even that much.
Maybe.
And the floor came to the two girders. You can almost kind of look over the edge of the floor in between the girders where the glass was. It was really weird. There's a guy from Smith Barney would never go near the edge. He was afraid of heights.
Mm-hmm.
It almost looked like you could not necessarily fall out, but it was a weird feeling. It wasn't like walking up against a wall like you would in any other building. And, I mean, it was just weird. I thought it was pretty neat, but so when the plane hit, it wasn't the bang of the plane hitting; it was the heat.
Yep.
And what you end up having the floor is now totally suspended, and every floor was designed the bucklings or the couplings were designed to carry the weight of that floor and all the computers and all the desks and all the people and you name it were on that floor. It was never designed to carry the weight of the floor above it. So what ended up happening is when the heat got hot enough and the couplings from the floor that were essentially buckled into the beams, when one of them came done and that floor dropped, it landed on the floor before it, which couldn't handle the weight, the floor after it, the hole after it. So almost what you saw was almost like, you see the same thing in, they had the earthquake in Mexico City?
Yeah.
Where the floors, the concrete floors weren't tied in well enough to the walls. So when you shook the walls, the floor just all dropped on people below them.
Yep.
Sort of the same thing. So the heat is what caused the issue, and I'm kind of surprised. I mean, I'm not totally surprised, Steph, but there was a day when you had to have water on top of a building in case of something ever happened.
Yeah, but they don't do that with these kind of skyscrapers. The height, pumping that much water up to the top, up there, it becomes a problem, plus the weight.
And yeah.
It also sets the building off from its swaying because they design them to sway with the wind and everything else. So I think it sets off their center of gravity.
Well, as you remember in the movie, Skyscraper with Steve McQueen, where they had the skyscraper was on fire. They had the water up there, and they finally found a way to release the water, and the water from the top came down and put the fire out.
I tell you, I have not seen the movie.
Most of the time, let's put it this way. There are ladies that have watched every Steve McQueen movie.
I didn't say I haven't seen Steve McQueen movies. I'm just saying I haven't seen that one.
As I've had a couple of girlfriends that said, in a quick moment, they would have been with that guy. They all thought he was pretty neat. I actually thought he was pretty neat. I thought he was terrific in Bullet. And then anyway, but we digress. But I mean, today is an amazing memorial sort of day, and the people from. I still can't get over that. You know, when you think about it. Those guys could probably get on planes today. They didn't bring any guns on. They didn't bring anything.
No, they didn't. The only thing we've got between what we had then is the TSA and a locked door between a cabin and the pilots, which didn't used to exist.
A reinforced locked door.
Correct.
Which still, if you were to tell somebody you got a knife at a stewardess's throat, I bet they still open it. Just saying, but I don't know.
Who knows?
Who knows? But anyway, the people in Pennsylvania, I guess they're dedicating that memorial today, and just was a shame they weren't able to get control of the plane enough to not kill themselves as they went down. But
it was. But they were heroes for making sure they didn't take out more people.
Thank God for cell phones, and somebody actually broke the rules and called on one.
Yep. Yep.
So anyway, it was pretty bad day in our history, and we're still. Steph, I don't think we've gotten over it. I don't think we ever have. I mean, we're never going to fire the TSA people.
No, I mean, it's definitely changed. It's changed a lot of different things, even from politically. I mean, went from kind of more of an open society, and then we got, I forgot what the name of those laws were that they passed right afterwards.
What was it, the Homeland Security Act?
Oh, that's part of it, but, it repealed a lot of our individual rights that they'd been fighting for roughly 70 years, you know, back. We gave up a lot of our own personal rights after that event, and we're still working to try and get some of those back.
How much safer do you feel because I've given up all those rights? I don't feel safer at all.
Yeah, I don't either. Unfortunately, I think it was a kind of a knee-jerk reaction and not looking really towards the future, but we seem to do that quite a bit these days. Hopefully over time we'll recognize the power of our own individual freedoms and fight to work to get those back.
It's early yet, but I'm going to ask you, how do you think that's going?
I don't know.
I think we're losing.
Yeah. Definitely.
Are you of the opinion that the Thomas Jefferson opinion that no matter what, even in a democracy, government just can't resist taking power from people, till finally you need a revolution every couple hundred years or so?
No, I'm not of that kind of extreme belief, but I do think without...
Well, I didn't say you had to shoot people.
I know. No, but I mean, I think that it's naturally in... It's not just government, but you look at administrative groups, let's go to the police, there's all sorts of different other entities out there, all trying to do their job. And, you know, admittedly, their job's a lot easier the more control they have, but then, there needs to be a good balance there because, frankly, you can't trust just everyone. And checks and balances are how this country has survived this long. A lot of other organizations or a lot of other countries have tried without checks and balances, and it just doesn't work. You know, people try and take power. So, like, it's just natural human behavior.
Why, I didn't really plan to get on the subject today, but since you
me
are...
Me neither.
But since you are leading me there, I'm accused you of doing it. Manny Weber usually likes to opine in on this, but then again, I saw him in the bar last night, so who knows whether he's opining or not this morning. How is it... If you were just a numbers guy like me, and you know, which makes you basically a royal pain in the ass in just about every step of the world, when you look at the incredible proliferation of cameras,
mm-hmm.
of cell phones knowing where you are all the time, I'm going to say the crime in this city is 10 times worse than before that was around. 5 times worse.
Well, I
so
don't,
how's it helping?
Well, I don't know. Are cameras supposed to help with that?
What are they supposed to do? Are they going to keep track of people?
Well, I think that's ultimately what they do, but I'm not sure that that's what they're...
Well, we have them on every subway platform. You can't watch a TV show where you don't have people on camera. I'm going to say that Chicago has more cameras than any other city in the world but London.
So have we replaced, like, the natural human interaction...
Absolutely.
...with cameras?
Absolutely.
Well, that's probably the root of the cause more than the... You know, introduction of cameras, or people feel they don't need to do that because they have cameras out there. So, we have a problem in general, I think, in the world with communication between individuals because we've gotten into such a digital world where people have forgotten or don't remember how to talk to one another.
Well, yeah, and I think it's probably true, but we've also gone with the, I'm not big on Chicago law enforcement because I was driving the expressways all weekend and multitudes of people went by me 100 miles an hour, and I never saw a policeman. So we're into the, we don't care if Steph gets knifed as long as we got a camera there to find out who the guy is that did it. So we don't want to be there before you get knifed. It's after.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of where they're going at the moment. Really hoping that we get someone, now that the mayor's not going to be there, I'm hoping we get someone in there who understands really how to combat crime in large cities and, can really bring in a commissioner that can help solve this problem. Because it's not a unique problem. There's a lot of unique situations in Chicago, but it's been solved the world over in large cities. And it's for some reason we don't seem to be able to fix it. So
I have one for you, Steph, before we start talking a little more about it. Because Stephanie is involved in a really interesting charity. And she knows a lot about charity, so I want to talk about some of that this morning. Some positive stuff instead of, for God's sake, just what's going on. But I have to bring this one up. And this is a negative shot against somebody that I actually kind of like, the police superintendent.
Mm-hmm.
The two officers that just were arrested. They weren't arrested. They were the guys who were accused of favoring some attorneys on accident investigations or something. I don't know if you spotted this. I thought maybe you did because your significant other is a lawyer. Your husband is a lawyer.
Well,
same thing.
Yeah, I know.
I'm sure he spotted that. Not that he it was an ambulance chaser. That's not what I'm going. But I'm saying the police commissioner was shocked and appalled, and this could never happen, right?
Yeah, that always surprises me when they say things.
Let me say this: my father died when he was 36 at age in 1956. He had, I think, some kind of, you know, big time cancer surgery in 54 or so, where they couldn't pull anything out. They put, you know, whatever, some kind of a release of plate up there so the pressure could get out, so it wasn't as painful.
Yep.
And because he was in the Signal Corps during the war, Signal Corps, for people don't know what that means, means you're a radio operator. The police, he was a policeman, instead of saying, you know, you're out of here, they were nice enough to say, well, if you're a Signal Corps guy, why don't you be a dispatcher and at least come to work? Because they wouldn't let him out on the street, obviously.
Right.
And the first call he got, I remember my mom telling me this, was from a couple of attorneys saying, when you get a call for an accident, before you call the, you know, whatever, send the squad car out, give us a call and we'll give you 5 hours an accident. This is 1954. So 5 hours an accident is real money.
Right.
And my parents were like church mice. They had nothing. And my mom said, we sat down, we talked about it, and we said, no, that's not the way we are. It's not the way we're bringing our kids up. And they said, no. Now, that was 63 years ago? Now we have a police superintendent who's shocked and appalled that that's happening. How the hell could he be shocked and appalled when I know about it?
Well, that's just called either being ignorant or choosing not to understand the market, the world that you live in or work in, I guess, is sort of the way it is, in my opinion. But
where's the Casablanca line, Manny? Shocked that there's gambling going on in this establishment. you're winning, sir. Yes. Anyway, Steph, you're involved in a charity. I'll let you describe what it is. Not only the charity is pretty neat, but how did you pick one? How do you pick one? How are the different ones organized? I'll help you through some of this, but it is kind of a fascinating area when you just look at how it all works or doesn't work in some cases.
It is, yes. I can't say that I just pick one. I'm actually a part of two.
Out of hundreds.
Right, two out of hundreds. And, I guess the way I got involved was through people that I knew either involved in those causes or they were causes that were near and dear to me for various reasons. And so the first one is the ALTSO organization, which stands for A Leg to Stand On. This organization basically brings money in and then provides individuals throughout the world with prosthetic legs. So children who have either, been born with a defect and don't have an extremity, a leg, in foreign countries.
No arms or just legs?
It's just legs.
Okay.
They provide them with a prosthetic limb that's really easy to maintain in foreign countries from the time that they get sponsored until their 18th birthday. So usually by that point, at least they've grown to adulthood, and then they can support themselves. So it really gives children the ability to grow up, to become active good participants in their communities, as opposed to in a lot of these countries sitting at home and not being able to do anything because there are no there's no way for them to get around. So it's a great organization, and they have an event on October 11th at the City Winery from 6 p.m. to 11 p.m. Come out. The event's a lot of fun. They bring in a bunch of bands who all volunteer their time. They play a bunch of music, and they compete for prizes. So it's for a great cause. It's got a lot of great music, and it's a lot of fun.
What is this? I'm going to interrupt and change subjects for a second, then we'll get back to it. But it's caught my eye. All right, Maddie, who does this remind you of? Musk narrows car paint options to simplify Tesla production.
I don't know what it reminds me of, but that's a funny headline.
Henry Ford, you can have any color you want as long as it's black. Because they were all just black for a while. Anyway, Steph, a few questions. Obviously, when it comes to a charitable organization, and this kind of holds true for some of the political organizations that people are always railing about. The CBOE, for instance, was a not-for-profit organization, okay, and it was set up under Delaware law where it was member-owned. But if you actually had money left at the end of the year, you know, we took in $500 and we spent $400, and the $100 left, it was actually taxable, even though the not-for-profit was more the name or the way it was organized. It was not there to make a profit. It was there for members. But if you did, it was not tax-free. It was not tax-exempt, that kind of thing.
Yep.
Now, but the kind of profits a non-profit that you're used to giving to for, you know, a cause such as this, those actually are tax-exempt, correct?
They are tax-exempt. You do get a tax credit for them, or but at least you did under the old tax law.
So you get a tax credit, and the place is able to take your contribution, pay salaries. Obviously, those people pay taxes on their, and whatever they pay out, don't they have to pay out a certain percentage of what they take in? Or there's some.
So it depends on. It's my understanding. It depends on the type of charity they are, okay, whether they can what they have to pay out at. The rate's actually pretty low, I believe, from a legal perspective. But to be a quality charity, I mean, everything I've read, I think, is around. You want to make sure that at least at a minimum 63% or higher is going out to the actual charity, not to just advertising and or staff support stuff. So both of these charities have a lot higher rates than 63%, the two that I'm involved in, and that was really important to me because I want to know that the money and the time that I'm spending on these things are really going to the cause that I'm interested in.
Is there a I'm asking these questions like if I asked you to prepare for it, but I know you have a wealth of knowledge that I'm just barely tapping into. Is there a difference between a charity and a foundation that's basically legal? A legal difference?
There is, but I couldn't tell you what it was.
Because don't foundations have to actually give out a certain percentage per year of the stuff they take in, or else they lose the tax? In other words, you can't just take in $100 million and pay out nothing. You better find a cause.
Yeah, that makes sense to me, but I don't know the legal ramifications of it. But yes, there's a designation difference between the two, and that would make sense to me.
So when you become as rich as Bill Gates, are you going to leave these things as charities, or are you going to make them into a foundation? I guess that's the $1 million. I don't know the answer to that.
I mean, I think most of the time these guys make decisions, or guys or gals make these decisions based on, you know, A, what's best in their best tax interest, and then two, from, you know, these guys are obviously passionate. I mean, you don't give away three-quarters of your wealth and not to charity and not think about the ramifications it can have in the world.
Well, if you're a sleazebag, you can get a huge salary and everything from the foundation, but I don't think Bill Gates is.
Yeah, I don't think he needs a salary.
No, but, no. But I mean, that wasn't that part of the issue, yes, with the Clinton thing, was what the daughter was making a big salary and so forth?
Yes, they were all, that all of the Clintons were making a salary off the foundation,
yeah.
Yes.
But anyway, but I guess when I did some, you probably don't know this, but one of these days, or I'll bore you and the Fed guys over an adult beverage. One of my clients, and this is, you know, we don't do a private placements for people at PTI, at least not yet. Hopefully in the future we will. But anyway, one of the clients had a bunch of these German gold bearer war bonds that I talk about once in a while from the 1930s.
Yep.
Or actually the 1920s. And of course, you know, it was such a, well, I can't start the story and sell a little piece of it. At the end of World War One, we only got 2 minutes, I promise I'll stop just before the break. The end of World War One, Germany had all kinds of reparations to pay to Britain and France, and then Britain and France, we hit them up for a World War One debt that we loaned them. So there was money bouncing from those three places. Well, somebody allowed the Germans to come over here, the Germans, it was like, you know, the war, the Panzer Division, and they sold these gold-backed bearer bonds here in the U.S. So our citizens were buying these German bonds. Germans were using them to pay off the French and British, and the French and British were sending the money to our government. So it was a total, I use the term circle jerk, is it?
Yeah.
Whatever, and a circle something. And anyway, but I got involved with some really odd people, Steph, and I mean some really, really odd people. And And one of the guys told me that if you don't have boots on the ground, I mean, if you decide, if you and I all of a sudden win the lotto, and we got, you know, tickets with, we're going to let Matty Weber in there, the lotto ticket. Anyway, if we decide we're going to build a water treatment plant in, like, Yemen or someplace, mm-hmm. that if you don't have boots on the ground or really a serious organization, upwards of 90% of the money is stolen on the way. I mean, if there's pipes on the ground, the pipes are gone. I mean, how do you, after the break, we have Joel, but if, later in the show, maybe we should go into how your place makes sure that these kids get what you send them.
Sure.
I mean, SP futures down 550, Dow futures down 85, NASDAQ futures down 13. Again, we're commemorating 9/11 and talking about some charities. Anybody has questions on this stuff, please tweet in. Maddie's the tweet master over there. Hurricane Florence, I think if you're in the way of that, what do you think? Steph, out of the way?
I don't know. I think we got a 50-50 shot. What do you think?
A punch not seen in more than 60 years. Was it Hurricane Hugo going right in the Charleston Harbor pretty much? This thing looks like it's going to go like kind of the same spot.
It does.
Hey, we'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
I'm shocked to find that gambling is going on in here.
You're winning, sir.
Oh, thank you very much.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of HomeSource Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters. The Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTIsecurities.com. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. She's Stephanie Coyne and Mr. Matt Weber. Boy, I could really have used this yesterday. S&P futures down 8, Dow futures down 126, Nasdaq futures down 19. Timing, I guess, is everything. Oil up 29 cents. 10-year yield, 2.95. It's up 0.02. You know what, Steph? I'm half thinking about it. We're going to get a clunker on this CPI or PPI this week. We're going to get one of the next two or three months. We're going to get like a one number, you know, a whole number, I think, but who knows. DAX down 79.7%. You can only lie so long. FTSE down 43.6%. CAC-RON down 17. CAC-RON's been leading things lower most days, but now today, yesterday it's barely down, while the others are down, you know, reasonably significantly. Over in Asia, big rally finally in the Nikkei, up 291, 1.3%, 22,664, but a little bit of a dead cat bounce, still under 23,000. Shanghai down 4.2%, 2664, no bounce there. Hang Seng, which has just been getting pummeled. I think David said yesterday, Steph, it's like on a 16-year low or something.
That's
Hang
what Seng, I was,
yeah. On 190 points, 0.7%, 26,422. I remember this thing in the mid-30s, like not all that long ago. oil up 29 cents, but careful. It's up 29 cents, but it's the same price it was yesterday morning, 67.83, been up 61. The spread is now $10.15, which I never dreamed it would go to, Steph, after we can now export ours. I thought that spread would close, and it's done nothing but go bigger. RBOB gas, 1.98, natural gas, 2.80, precious metals, gold down another 50 cents, 11.99, can't get over 1,200, silver down 3 cents. They are dead in the water, both of these. I own a lot of both of them, but who knows. If you get a big number in the CPI this week, we might get a pop out of those guys. Matty, what do you got for us, Traffic Weather Sports?
Coming up on 37 minutes past the hour, good morning to everyone out there. Off to a great start on the area expressways, best start in a while for a weekday morning. No issues on the Edens or Kennedy, same with the Eisenhower, Stevenson, Southside expressways, all looking good. No real concerns, no accidents or issues. One area of concern off the expressways is on the south side. Torrance at 184th, we had a semi go into a building. And that's caused Torrance Avenue between 186th and Ridge Road to be closed as crews work on that situation. So keep that in mind on the south side. Everything else looking okay out there. Weather today, a beautiful day in the Chicagoland area today. Partly cloudy skies, a high of 77, low humidity. Right now it's crystal clear and 60 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny with a high of 107. Right now it's clear and 80. In sports, Cubs really scuffling of late, and it's causing them some concern in the standings. They lost to the Brewers last night 3-2. They're now one game up on Milwaukee with two more games left in this series. Cubs better get their act together. White Sox lost to the Royals 4-3. Diamondbacks were blown out by the Rockies 13-2. Monday Night Football doubleheader last night was a couple of blowouts. Jets killed the Lions in Detroit 48-17. Sorry, Joel. Rams blew out the Raiders, and John Gruden's debut, 33-13. Chief.
Joel, are you with us, buddy?
Good morning, Chief. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you doing?
Oh, we're doing okay here in the Motor City.
Did you guys have your, I was watching your team last night. I was wondering if you were going to recover from that.
Well, I mean, and I've said this on the show several times. I do live in Detroit. I've spent a majority of my life in Detroit, but I have not been a Lions fan since one day in the 80s, and you're probably too young to remember this, Matty Chief, you may remember this, the U.S. Football League, and actually Mr. Trump was behind this, and they were trying to sign a bunch of players, and they had an opportunity to sign Billy Sims.
And I remember that, yeah.
The Lions blew it. And he went on Monday Night Football announcing that he was leaving the Lions to go play in the USFL. Also, they had a chance to hire Chuck Knox at one point. They hired Monty Clark. There's just many things. So I am I'm in the Detroit area, so I like to see Detroit people do well. It makes people happy. There's a lot of loyal Lions fans out there. But I do have one lesson from that game that I would like to talk to everyone about, and it just relates, and it relates to the markets too. Chief, you're a fundamental guy, right?
Yep.
Do you pay much to technical analysis or anything like that?
If I was better at it, I probably would. But I ask David and I ask you, so I ask you guys.
You ever heard analysis that when you talk about someone trading stocks and trading using charts? You ever heard the term analysis paralysis?
Yes.
Okay. Well, that is Matt Patricia to the T, all right? He's walking around with I don't know how many things attached to his side, his color-coded sheet, and I don't know if they use iPads or Surfaces or whatever. He's looking at all these things. I don't know if he can see them through that beard. Okay, and he's looking at 90 different things, and he's not looking out on the field. So, obviously, that was one of the worst shellackings for a new coach home on Monday Night Football. What an absolute embarrassment.
Yep.
And, boy, Stafford throwing 5 interceptions? Holy moly. I mean, analysis paralysis. Don't ever get caught up in so many indicators and so many things that, you know, you don't look out on the field. And I was watching it with my daughter, and that's the first thing I said. So, boy, oh, boy, what a horrible performance in the first game.
It looked to me like, I know these guys are all experts, accent expert, right? I thought he got dinged because a couple of those interceptions, there were three people with white jerseys standing there, and he still threw the ball, and that's not Matthew Stafford. I mean, I wonder if he was wobbly.
Yeah, well, they show him he got hit in the first quarter, but he's a tough guy. He didn't come out, but I mean, I was helping out with the family dinner. I didn't see absolutely everything, but where was that? Did that second round draft choice have any runs? Kerryon Johnson from Auburn. I mean, you got to try and establish a run or something like that.
Well, I was watching the Cubs.
Boy, things are looking bleak here for the Motor City Kitties. That's all I have to say after one game.
Well, are the Jets any good? Probably not even, really, are they?
I mean, Sam Darnold, well, you saw what happened on the first play. He threw a pick six. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I hope they are good because, you know, that'd be an indication that maybe the Lions aren't as bad. They also have, like, a really, really tough schedule. So, man, oh, man, and that division's getting tougher. Your Bears?
Yeah.
I thought your Bears were going to pull it out on Sunday night, Chief.
Well, they still are the Bears.
They were close.
Yeah.
All right, I got to ask you, what are we going to get a big number, one of these CPIs? Are we going to – everybody's talking about inflation.
Yeah.
And if we do, is it going to change the tone of the market? You know, the rates go up and maybe some of my gold and silver move and market make a difference? I don't know. I was surprised that yesterday, after last week was so kind of crummy – yesterday was just kind of a blah day, and you know, I didn't think it would be that quiet. I didn't think it would be that positive, but it was.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of positive. I mean, you made a challenge at Friday's high, closed week, and now we're weak this morning. So I won't say I'm worried, but I'm really going to focus. We're still above last week's low, and this is the Spoo's 2865 basis of September number. And I also want to, you know, alert our listeners, it's rollover this week,
yep.
Chief. You're familiar with that term?
Oh, yeah.
And during rollover, I mean, in my, 30-plus years walking, watching the market, sometimes there's some really strange two-sided action. So you're rolling from the SEP to the DEES, the traders that want to, transfer either their long or their shorts to the December contract. It creates pockets in the market. So I think that's one thing you got to keep an eye on for this week, you know, is the rollover. Actually, the D starts trading tomorrow. And, you know, keeping an eye on last week's low is a big number. 2865 is my indicator so far.
No, if you know, what did they say? If you're Aunt Nell had a mustache, you'd be your Uncle Ned. I mean, if.
I have a different way.
Yeah, I do
but
too.
I don't think I could say
yeah,
it. Go ahead.
Yeah, we cleaned that one up a little for the air.
Okay.
If the fangs start to degrade, can the rest of the market withstand it? I don't know if it can. It has been. We've seen this shift all over the place for years now to where there's enough money in the pool that whatever sector wants to go down, another sector, you know, kind of pops back up. But I don't know if those guys go down. They've been such a big chunk of the rally. It's hard for me to imagine that if they all of a sudden, I want to say fall apart, but if they give back a little bit of that, you know, maybe a little percentage of that, that all of a sudden everybody's going to run around and start buying other stuff. But maybe.
Yeah, I mean, well, two things. If it's, you know, obviously these quick, you know, flash crash days and stuff, you know, it's harder, you know, to do the asset allocation. If it's re-asset allocation, if it's like a slow drip and just like this draining market that, you know, goes like that, then they'll have a chance to sell out of, you know, the FANG stocks and buy pot stocks. I mean, you know, where else would you put your money if you're coming out of the FANG stocks but in the marijuana sector?
Well, you could put it in, like, cash for a while, maybe. But, I mean, it's...
Yeah. Being a little facetious there.
I know. The one I'm worried about, I mean, Amazon, obviously, I have this ongoing fundamental thing about it. I just think it's, you know, it's a pie in people. It's something that's a gleam in people's eye. But I can't believe that we're going to go another 3 or 4 or 5 months with an increasing fight with China, which I hope, by the way, ends one of these days where we declare victory or something, or they do, and it's back to business as usual. But I don't know if we can go another 4, 5, 6 months with this increasing bad feelings with China and Apple hanging in there when they do all their business over there. I see a conflict there someplace, not yet, but and not today, not tomorrow, but somewhere. I got to believe that they become part of this. And I could be totally wrong, but.
Well, midterm elections are coming up, so that what better time there would there to be to make a deal than, you know, go right into the midterm elections. You know, also, you know, at any second he could pull all these tariffs off the, you know, off the table.
Right.
So it is a wild card. I mean, another thing you could think about, markets just kind of, you know, maybe a little bit lazy here, September, October, coming in November, gear up for the Santa Claus rally.
Yep.
So a lot of different factors. Just real quickly, your investors and traders, keep an eye on your hurricane stocks. Things are heating up on the East Coast. Generac, Home Depot, Lowe's, those things are trading in the green. And if you're long your insurance stocks, your reinsurers, and they're trading in the red this morning, that's the reason. Well, Hurricane Florence is kicking up its heels on the East Coast.
All right, buddy. Have a good one. Go blue for you guys.
Yeah, we even talk any Michigan
today.
Yeah,
we'll do it next week.
I'll have to call in tomorrow.
All right, SP Futures down 875, Dow Futures down 128. We'll be right back, Stocks and Jacks. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, if they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back, Stocks and Jocks. Some new music here from Mr. Matt Weber. Hey, I have a Husky futures down 8, Dow futures down 117, NASDAQ futures down 23. Steph, I have a you're a little too young for this, but I'll give it to you anyway. I was listening to the late Casey Kasem, was that his name?
Yep.
Casey Kasem.
And three back sort of in my day, and there's been a few afterward, but the three biggest songs that were produced after the artist croaked, or passed away, shall we say.
And, what were the three?
Yeah, but I think, he had the three, and I'm thinking there might be a couple afterward. I think one of the Beatles ones, didn't after John Lennon died, didn't they produce something? Might have been a couple after, but these are the three he came out with. And boy, I would not have, I didn't realize two of them, one of them I knew, but I didn't know the other two. Okay. Yeah.
So what are they?
Yeah,
with Janis Joplin, Me and Bobby McGee, was after she overdosed.
Really?
And Jim Croce, sitting by the dock of the bay. Not Jim Croce, Otis Redding.
Otis Redding.
Sitting at the dock of the bay was after the airplane crash.
It's one of my favorite songs.
Oh, yeah. And Jim Croce, Time in a Bottle, was after, was he an airplane crash, too? Not sure. A lot of those people went in airplane crashes, but those were three significant songs. I knew Otis Redding. I did not realize that Bobby McGee was after she overdosed.
Jim Croce did die in an aviation accident.
And Janis Joplin overdosed, right?
Yes. I think. Yeah. Jim Croce died in 1973.
What a talent she was, huh?
Boy, she was amazing.
So was Mama Cass, for God's sake. She went on a ham sandwich. That's what a way to go. Yeah.
Almost like Elvis.
Yeah. Elvis, God, it was a
mess.
This weekend was the how many year anniversary of Elvis and Ed Sullivan? And they did not show him below the waist, as you recall. Too sexy for TV in those days.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, too sexy. So
I was wondering why, and then you said it, and I was like, oh, yeah, that's
yeah,
right.
Too sexy for TV. But, well, Steph, we were talking a little bit about charitable things. When you, this is always kind of an odd deal when you, from what I learned selling for the listeners, I was talking about those bonds I was trying to deal with years ago. And, of course, I never sold any because it really isn't a market. But I met, shall we say, dozens of some of the most interesting creatures that I ever came across. And to say, Steph, there's this worldwide subculture where the Monoforts of the world and the Flynns, once you get involved in that, it must be almost addictive. When you leave regular world, like I think you and I are in, where you have exchanges, you have stuff, you have rules, such as they are, but you do have them.
Mm-hmm.
And most people, I'd say, adhere to them. And all of a sudden you wander into this kind of between country sort of world. It's almost like an ether where there's all these creatures moving money from this place to that place and putting these funds together, and they're giving guarantees on stuff they don't even really have. I mean, some people use these bonds as guarantees for these international money flows, and they weren't even fungible. And yet they were being used as collateral. I'm going, how do you use something I can't sell for collateral? Watch, I mean, there's people with accounts in Switzerland, and there's dictators with accounts in places where you, in order to move stuff in Africa.
Yep.
And I don't know the morals of it. I don't know the morals of it. I'm going to guess that most foundations, charitable organizations that have people that are seriously moral runner, they wouldn't be doing it in the first place. I'm pretty convinced that, I won't name a country like Yemen or someplace, if you build a water treatment plant over there, you got to pay off the dictator.
Well, I mean, it seems to work that way. I can't say I have any experience on any of that, but, China has been into a lot of these markets, which is, I know is not exactly at all what you're talking about, but into giving money to countries to do major investments like water treatment plants, and, now a lot of those countries are starting to think secondly about it because there are ties to it. And so I think it depends on what organization you're kind of working with. I do know, the Gates Foundation, when they first started giving money away, kind of were giving this away to charities that existed in countries. And then they quickly realized that a lot of the money wasn't getting where it was supposed to.
Right.
And they started putting actually their own people into countries to, start.
Well, that's what I referred to earlier as boots on the ground. If you don't have your own people there, you just send a check, you might as well watch it disappear.
Right, yeah. So I think that was a major learning curve for them, and, they're incredibly strict about who they give money to. I did meet the person who was making decisions, or one of, I think there's two individuals who, for the Gates Foundation, that do assessments on charities and where they give money and where they don't. And, it is a very detailed process. So, I think good charities take the time and the investment to make sure that their money is going to the right people, and that goes for inside and outside of the U.S. So, like I said, a charity ALTSO, or I like to stand on, which is one, they do a majority of their work overseas, and then there's the March of Dimes, which primarily works in the United States, although they do try and support children all over the world, so with their current initiatives. So, they're just very different organizations, but they do a lot of good. And so, it's great to give back and to really help kids.
Well, it's amazing that you almost need an overhead of an organization just to give money away and not get it stolen.
You do. You got to do your background.
Yeah.
I guess it's like the same in all of us, right? You hand some guy on the corner $5, you're not really sure where it's going to go to, but if you kind of do some research on where you're giving your money to, it's different, right?
Or you could walk out of the deli with a sandwich and hand it to him.
You could.
And then they might be pissed at you. They might not be.
I have a feeling they get a lot of sandwiches sometimes.
Yeah. I know that when I worked at Pullman, and Robin, who's again been on the show, she did a lot of work with the Import-Export Bank. But now that's kind of a different world to where Kellogg used to be part of Pullman. So, okay, mm-hmm. So they would do the engineering and say a... This is 30 years ago. So they would do the engineering work and say a petrochemical facility in Saudi or someplace. Well, of course, you're dealing with the Saudi government and you're looking to have... You're going to lend, they say, well, we don't really have the dough, which, of course, they had, but they'd use the Import-Export Bank, which now is under big, somewhat big heat, and rightfully so, because it sort of changed. But in those days, you would give the money, the loan to the whatever the group was that's doing the plant, and Rabbit could probably tell you whether the government backed up the plant or not. Or, but essentially, there was a stream of income that mm-hmm. went to the plant. So there was a reason for you to expect to get paid back.
Right.
You know, once the plant's up and running, you're taking in crude oil and spitting out gasoline and diesel. Guess what? You should be making some money on that. So you became essentially a partner until you got paid off. Okay. So there were, or if it's an electric dam, you're selling electricity, something like that. Well, the Import Export Bank has, of course, moved off into lending people money to buy like fighter jets and Boeing. Well, they just sit there. There's no income associated with them. You're hoping somebody pays it back, and sometimes they don't. In which case, the taxpayers are on the hook for jets that Boeing sold and was pretty fat and happy doing it. But you really don't. You're not going to get probably in most countries. Are you going to get government support for what you guys do or for what a charity does? I mean, obviously, if you're doing this in Saudi, of course, they got enough money; they don't need your help. But if you did, I think you probably could count on some sort of an infrastructure to where the prosthesis you send over gets to the right kid. I mean, what do you do if you're in, you know, Congo or someplace?
Yeah, so the way they select children is that the applications come in, and then they usually go out and meet the children. So they have representatives kind of around the world. They've helped more than 1,700 children to date over the last 15 years, and they've got a mission to really help 1,000 more in 2019. So they select children, like I said, from all sorts of different industrial country, or I should say third world nations, that you know, put in petition to get this kind of funding. And it comes usually through word of mouth from other people or other individuals who have had prosthesis given by the ALTSO. So it's kind of more of a word of mouth thing in terms of where people are helped. And that's kind of makes this organization special, because they're not really looking to go through a government to find, you know, 10 children that have legs that aren't there. They really work with the communities to try and pick out children whose lives will be better because, you know, now they can walk the 2 to 3 miles to school that they couldn't before. So that's kind of how this charity is unique.
So you're working, if there's doctors without borders, they know about you guys. If there's some sort of a Catholic charity, they know about you guys.
Correct.
Okay, so it's the charitable community knows about you.
Correct. So it's more of a word of mouth kind of idea.
Do you do any of it domestically?
ALTSO does not. They do not provide prosthesis domestically. Now, March of Dimes does a ton of work domestically.
Okay.
Their big pitch is, or the thing they're really working on, is trying to prevent premature birth. So there are some amazing statistics on the amount of money we all spent in healthcare for premature children and the amount of long-term impact it has on the children's lives. And the March of Dimes is investing huge amounts of money into consortiums of all sorts of different kinds of doctors who are looking at why premature birth occurs. So they've made some huge strides over the last couple of years, and you know, the organization's really doing amazing things.
Given the Fed antics since in the last 50 years, I think they should at least raise it to March of Quarters.
For sure.
maybe March of Susan B. Anthony Dollars or something. By the way, do you have any Susan B. Anthony Dollars?
I don't think I do. I think if I did, I'd know. But no, I don't think so. My mom has a couple.
I have a roll that our man McPhee sold me. and I'm such an idiot, I don't have it in my truck. So whenever I park in one of these idiot parking meters, I still have to use my credit card, even though I got those things so I could put them in the meter, and then I don't.
They even take those things anymore?
That's what they take. They take the dollar coins, right, Manny? Which nobody ever has. I guess they would take quarters, too, if you had a whole pocket full of quarters.
Yeah, I've used quarters before. I've never used dollar coins.
Yeah, I think they use dollar coins. But they don't use dimes. They don't use dollar bills. And they're no currency.
Well, I think it is owned by a hedge fund here. So.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's $6 for an hour and a half
right.
by Club Lago. So I mean, you'd have to have, you know, your pants would be around your ankles if you had enough quarters for the $6, which probably wouldn't be a good look on the street, especially for me. But if somebody here, let's say in a city, an errant bullet blows somebody's lower leg off and they're a kid, they can pretty much go to county and they'll be taken care of, you would hope?
Hey, I don't 100% know, but yes, I mean, we do have, as a medical person, you swear an oath to help whatever comes in the door, which is part of where our healthcare costs come in. So, I believe that they will provide you with, there's a lot of services in the United States that will help individuals domestically with those kinds of issues.
Okay, are you ever, or anybody who's on, involved with this, do you guys ever do a, I'll use the term field trip, does anybody ever go somewhere and watch the process or no?
So I have not, the ALTSO is a very small organization from a administrative perspective. So the three individuals who lead the organization regularly go all over the world to make sure that kids are there, and they get pictures of every child. The children write stories about how it's improved their life. So there's a lot of interaction with the children even after they are initially given their prosthesis. And then, they're really supported till their 18th birthday, and in most cases till their 21st birthday. It depends on kind of what their needs are. So it's an active participation throughout their life.
Sorry to be grilling you, but I'm amazingly interested in this. So if you have essentially a Doctors Without Borders guy says, I got two kids here that need a prosthesis, he contacts you guys or somebody that he knows that has contacted you guys. Somehow you get measurements or pictures or something. You have whatever you need made here and shipped to him, and hopefully it gets there. You make sure it gets there, and then he takes care of it on that end and sends you pictures, and maybe one day somebody will drop in and see him or something.
Yeah, so the prosthesis that they use is a specific one. It's very simple. So it's it's not what you see on TV, any of these electric ones that provide anything. It's literally a foot kind of with a metal shaft in it, and then usually a cup that holds the leg. And those need to be fitted, but the cup part does, but the rest of it they can screw up. So once they fit the top part, as you grow, a lot of that will grow. You'll need to expand the top piece, but the bottom parts, you just got to make them longer as kids grow. So, the model that they use is very dynamic, and it allows for a lot of customization for very inexpensively. So it costs roughly $250 per kid for their lifetime to support them in this manner, and that's really because the technology that they're using is really simple and convertible as they grow.
Okay. So you picked these guys because you knew somebody that was in there, and it sounded good, pretty much.
Yeah, so this was an organization. I'd been to their event quite a few times. They asked me to help join one of their boards. It's a great cause, and you can see how it impacts children's lives directly, and that was important to me, so I joined.
How would, if I went out tomorrow to look for one of these, or more to the point, I'd just pick your brain, how do you pick one? There's got to be 15 of them that were heart tuggers.
There are, so... I'd have to look it up because I don't remember the name of the website, but there's a website that'll tell you conversion rates in terms of how much money people give in and what percentage goes out to actually help individuals. There's a website, and I'll have to look it up. I'll have to give you the name. You can tell the listeners later on. But that's a great place to start. Then at least you know that your money's going to the cause and not to supporting just an organization. That would be the first thing. Then I also talk to a lot of people. I talk to people that I meet and things they're interested in and why they're interested, and just like you're asking me, and I think it makes a difference. So that's how I got the March of Dimes. The March of Dimes I got into because one of my colleagues was really involved. He had a bunch of some premature children where they were very helpful, and then my sister had a premature daughter, so that got me very interested in this initiative.
Didn't those guys have some sort of a, I vaguely, they were considered a terrific organization for a long time. Didn't they have a little bit of a period where they didn't have such a good period? Now they're kind of back on the hunt, I think. Is that the fair statement?
So the March of Dimes, if you guys don't know, originally was, the pitch was give a dime and fight polio. So, they went around the world, they created a polio vaccine, they brought it out, and then I believe it was the CIA that started using polio vaccination around the world to kind of infiltrate countries. And that's where...
Can you imagine that?
Yeah, that's where they started kind of getting a bad reputation. After polio, for the most part, it's pretty much gone. they needed to switch to a new cause, and they did switch to premature birth, which is not as easy as March a Dime for Polio to explain, but it's kind of gotten a lot more notoriety with the Zika, because they are actively involved in prevention of Zika and research on what Zika actually is and how it is affecting individuals, because it does involve premature birth.
So those like you and, well, actually, Manny Weber, this was 35. This birthday month is 35, Manny? Is that the right number?
Yeah, I turned 35 on Saturday.
And so I was having trouble finding out the exact day because you've been celebrating it. You could have had the longest celebration since Audrey.
First of all, I didn't do anything. Second of all, I went out to dinner Friday night, and then I had a party on my actual birthday on Saturday. That was it. And then we're going to New York this week, but that's not really for my birthday.
Your girlfriend was telling me about it a week ago.
In her mind, this is all one big package.
Yes.
In my mind, the birthday came and went. Now we're just going to New York.
Okay. Just saying. Just remember, whatever she does for you, you got to do more for her.
Noted.
The difference between the way men and women think.
Yes, and in terms of birthdays, guys are a bother. It means I'm getting older. I don't want to pay attention to it.
But you know what? I have to say, I don't understand. A lot of people say, it's my birthday week. I don't have a birthday week. I don't know. I'm lucky if my birthday gets celebrated. And partly because, like you said, I'm not sure I really want to celebrate another year gone.
Well, for those of you that are 35, you and Maddie, or younger, I'm going to say that it you can't even begin to explain to people the horror people felt with polio, what a big deal it was in this country before the vaccine came out. You can't even begin to explain it. I mean, how people wouldn't go to the beach, they wouldn't go where you didn't know how it attacked you. There were we used to go to what's the first look, the night of the diseases before the auto show, the big charity event where everybody wears tuxedos, and it's always fun to watch both the men and the women think that the whatever they're wearing still fits, when in fact it probably doesn't. I don't know which is worse, the guys stuffed into it or the women not exactly stuffed into it. You know what I'm saying? But we used to go for the they wore the Chicago Lung Association, and then they sort of fell out with but they started out as polio.
Yeah.
Was there a big deal? And there were pictures of, I'm thinking it's dead of winter in rural areas, and it's got to be zero, and the classes are outside. There's a classroom with the floor and the blackboard and the whole bit without walls.
Yep.
And, because people didn't want to be in a room with anybody for fear. They didn't know how polio spread. It was air, right?
I believe it was a virus.
But I think it didn't have to be like saliva to saliva. You could get it in the air, I think.
I you know what? I don't know.
I'm not positive on it either. But I mean, it was. I don't know if there's much more of a. I mean, obviously, childhood cancers is bad. But Franklin Roosevelt, I believe I read that he was a big, strong guy,
mm-hmm.
and he was in the Navy and a whole bit. Well, he swam from one of the islands, Nantucket, to one of the other ones. He was that good of a swimmer. And he got out of the water and he felt a chill on Friday, and Sunday he was paralyzed. I mean, it was that fast, and and I mean, it was when that vaccine came out, they almost had a national holiday for Jonas Salk,
as they should. By the way, it says the polio virus usually enters the environment in the feces of someone who's infected. In areas with poor sanitation, the virus easily spreads from feces into the water supply or by touch into food. In addition, because polio is so contagious, direct contact with a person infected with the virus can cause polio.
So it's not really airborne.
There you go.
Right.
Okay. Thank you for clearing that up for us. Yeah, my my father's first cousin had polio, so we kind of grew up around that.
So how did Roosevelt get it in the water? He must have got it before he got in the water.
Well, I mean, you know, back in the day, they were dumping a lot of feces into the water out there. So
that's true.
Probably is direct contact.
Oh, God. I never even thought of that. Anyway, but that was, you know, these kind of things. I mean, in one of these days, I mean, I sure hope we don't ever get one, but if we ever get some kind of flu or whatever that knocks a bunch of people out, I mean, what do you think? I mean, we've got this hurricane coming, and obviously it'll wreck a bunch of stuff, but I mean, we haven't really had, knock on wood, any kind of an instance where something hit and, you know, a million people died that weren't supposed to die and challenged like life insurance firms and everybody. I mean, let's hope we never do, but you wonder how ready are we for something like that?
Yeah,
I mean,
Katrina was probably the closest, right, in our recent memory.
Not many people passed away, and those that did weren't exactly the million-dollar-a-year earners, which is a horrible thing to say, but
it is horrible.
But it's true. I mean, right? I mean, the people who who died in 9/11. You know, especially the people who work for what was the name of the place at the top of the place? All the bond traders.
Yeah, I know. I always forget the name. They were our largest client. Wiped yeah. our business out that day, and I can't remember their name. I think that's selective memory.
Oh God, yeah. And but they, I mean, I'm going to guess most of those people had $1 million policies, at least. You know, maybe more.
You would hope so.
Yeah, you would hope so. And I ask this question every year, and it's a nasty question. Do you think anybody just walked away and isn't really dead?
Oh, yeah. That's, you know, the answer is probably not.
I'm going to say probably not, too, but boy, what an opportunity.
Well, yeah, if that's truly your goal.
What if you're in the midst of some, like, it doesn't matter if you're a guy, a horrible divorce, the kids hate you, your family hates you, you're about to get fired, and you got,
oh.
You know, I mean, you just say the hell with it, and now you're in, you know, you're in Turkey or someplace.
Oh, what if you're running a Ponzi scheme? That's the ones. Those yeah. are the ones who walk away, you know?
Well, yeah, it's a, I mean, so what do you, we haven't delved into politics or the market at all, but I have to get your opinion, obviously. What do you make of all this? How much, I think what Joel said when he was in, Joel basically said that with the midterm elections coming up, most people feel, and I'm going to say he's probably 80% correct, 80% chance of being correct, most people feel that whatever the fight is with China at the end of October will somehow declare victory, patch it up, market will rally up, assuming it's even down from now to then. We'll have a few-day rally going into midterm elections in an attempt to win the both houses of Congress again for the and I think most market participants, since every time you've sold into the politics of the administration, you basically got it stuck where the sun don't shine. I mean, it always comes back when everything looks like it's bad. They'll do something and it goes the other way. That's my read of it, which is also very dangerous. It's like every single time. There's lightning warnings on the golf course. You use it as an opportunity to go out there and go on because nobody else is on there. One of these days, you know, maybe you've done it for 40 years and gotten away with it, but there's always the next time. I mean, how do you, I guess, a two-part question. How do you not say the people who say ignore all the bad news are wrong, and yet in your heart of hearts you know that you can't always ignore the warnings because someday they actually happen?
I think that at the moment we're really working on public sentiment. So if they can pull it off and the public believes that they really did get a deal and didn't just do this for as a public stunt, then I think, unfortunately, you're right, that the stock market's going to kind of rally and we're going to kind of keep cruising along. I hate to say it, but I think we're looking at a post-fact world, and if we really look into the facts, and this is the same thing I'm curious about with NAFTA, you know, they're negotiating a new deal, and they're in theory going to close it, but is a deal really any different? Like, I haven't heard any of the details, and that's, you know, or are we really just, causing a ruckus, negotiating, and then coming back out with pretty much the same deal we went into and saying it's victory? So, until I see some of the output of this, I'm not really sure what to believe, and frankly, I wish the media, since that seems to be the only thing that has any influence these days, would pick up some of this and really do some analysis on it.
What makes you think they have any facts?
Well, that's the whole question. I don't think any of us have the access to the facts at the moment, and that's part of the problem.
It's been, and I'm not saying this isn't anywhere, because I'm not the world's best internet terrier dog, but I have not seen anything regarding the Mexico, quote, deal. Everything's a deal with this guy. That says here's 25 of the biggest points beforehand, and here's 25 after. The only two I did find, in fairness, was the one about some percentage of cars had to be made by people over $16 an hour, and I have no idea if there was a clause like that in the one before or what it was, and what 75% of the car had to be made in North America for the thing to be
American made.
Well, no, for the thing to be go back and forth in North America.
Got it.
Or something like that. So those are the only two things I read. I don't know if they're word for word what the old one was. I'm guessing the $16 an hour one wasn't. But I don't know.
Reason, yeah.
But I mean, you would think there'd be somebody who inked an article at this point and said, well, here's 15 major in the old one and here's how they all change.
One would hope.
Yeah. And I what do you make of, you know, you've little bit of a different business than I am, in the sense that I got to watch this stuff all day long for my clients. But you're sort of, I mean, you're supposed to be in your business aware of what's going on in the world. I mean, you can't.
For sure.
How do you, you know, how do you deal with the idea that there really are no facts in anything? I mean, what I'm saying is we have a president, and how do you, and what's it taught you about the American populace when you have a guy that week after week after week, and I swore not to do any politics today, but it starts ranting about milk prices. To where I'll be sitting somewhere, maybe in the same saloon I saw Maddie Weber last night, and the person next to me starts giving me grief about milk prices. One softball on Sunday. One of the old duck pitchers, he's even older than me, he was the other pitcher. And he says, well, what are we going to do about these milk prices? I mean, this is an outrage. I go, do you even care?
I mean, when was the last time you drank milk?
Well, no, that's a question. But I'm saying, I said, do you have any idea how long one of these treaties are?
Yeah.
So there's, you know, there are thousands and thousands of pages. I said, do you have any idea what the tariff is on Canadian lumber? Well, we probably don't have one. Yeah, you do. It's like 20%. And it adds $3,500 to $9,000 to the price of every new home, depending on the size of the home. He looks at me and he goes, really? I said, yeah, you know, you've never bought sugar. And again, the guy's 70. I said, you've never bought sugar in your lifetime where there wasn't a sugar tariff.
Exactly.
You're kidding. I mean, but the fact that you have somebody who obviously knows, not that people are idiots. That's not my spiel here.
They're fed
information on something they know nothing about. I mean, you could feed me information and you know, an anatomy or something, and after hearing it 10 times, I'm probably going to believe it because I don't know much about anatomy. I'm not a doctor.
Right.
But if you're a doctor, you might sit there and go, man, how many times does your husband see guys talking about legal stuff on TV, and he sit there and go, well, that's BS.
Oh, all the time.
All the time. So, but how many times is Trump going to talk about this dried milk tariff?
Yeah.
And, you know, and I said, you know, by the way, do you even know, what exactly is the tariff and who's it on? He goes, well, we're screwing our people. I said, it's a tax on Canadian consumers
that
drink milk. He goes, yeah, but like a pizza in Toronto is $12 more than it is here. I said, first of all, do the math.
Right.
It's that would be $36 a pound more for cheese. Because unless it's a really good pizza, I doubt if there's more than a third of a pound of cheese on there. I said, plus, who pays it? Well, the guy having the pizza. Bingo. The Canadian pizza eater is paying this tax to protect Canadian dairy farmers.
Right.
And that's a decision they've made, just like we have with
lumber
and what the Japanese have with rice,
yep,
and we have with sugar. Really, I didn't understand. I didn't realize that all kind of worked together. Yeah, it does. Well, how come this guy keeps talking about the milk trip? I don't know.
Yeah.
that's where we started the conversation. You know, I mean,
I don't know why he does either. I mean, you know, it's a sticking point for him, which is interesting because I don't think, you know, either somebody has told him, you know, I don't know, Kellogg or somebody who uses milk supplement to make something in the U.S. I don't know, but he's got on this rant, and I don't understand. It doesn't make a lot of logical or financial sense to me. But hey, that's kind of par for the course. So,
I mean, but you know what? It's egregious enough. The number's high enough. 273% tariff. It's high enough to be a catchword.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, what was the? I was reading something about presidential. Boy, you can see stuff by how my mind works or doesn't work. Somebody was down in Indiana and wrote this article in the Trib. Who's the guy that Maddie looked this up? Was Tippecanoe and Tyler too? Who was Tippecanoe? What's the name of the guy? Was it Harrison? What was the president that ran on that? First of all, the battle was about 50 people, and he wasn't even there. But somehow, or he was there for like a minute. And yet, he ran on this battle cry of this battle in Tippecanoe, Indiana. It was like three guys on a street corner having a fight. And yet, he, you know, in everybody's mind, this thing became, you know,
rally.
Battle of Midway, for God's sake. You know, and I mean, it's amazing. It's not what people, it's not what you say, it's what people hear, I guess, is the...
And to your point, it's been happening for, you know, hundreds of years.
Yeah. It's a, well, you pick out one thing, and it's always, well, if there's a problem with county hospital, it's one person that went in there and died that maybe shouldn't have. Right? Or something.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden this person becomes the poster child for God knows what. Or there's, you know, as much as horrendous as it was, the kid from Illinois that went down and got lynched.
Yep.
Well, God, how many lynching, I mean, first of all, as horrible as it was, how many people got lynched in the South in those years? Thousands? mean, how many people don't even know their name are gone? I mean, not that, you know, if you don't know their name, you don't know about them, obviously, but, I mean, it's, go ahead.
Yeah, well, they're using that, too, for the immigrants, you know, saying that they're all criminals when you've got, you know, in fact, probably they're less criminal activity than the majority of the population. So it's just they pull out someone, use it as an example, and then everyone believes it's a big problem.
Well, we've got the entire day of 9/11 remembrance. Look at the amount of... can you imagine anywhere in your lifetime, which is going to be a lot longer than mine, actuarially for sure, any day in which you or Matt Weber go out to the airport and not see a TSA person?
Not moving forward in my life. In the past, yes, but not moving forward.
What would, I mean, even if the day the earth stood still, the saucer landed and said, you guys got to stop all wars or we're going to kill everybody, and miraculously every war stopped, I don't think you'd still get rid of these people.
I think it's become a way of life now.
Yeah.
I think it's something we just accept.
And I don't know. I guess, as you know, I rant once in a while about this. This whole idea of privacy and all this stuff, I don't get where people... You know what? The younger people are, the less they're concerned about it. And that, to me, is a very troubling trend.
Yeah, it worries me, too. I'm pretty particular about my privacy, despite the fact that I'm on the radio.
Yeah.
But I don't do a lot of Facebook. I don't do a lot of any of that sorts of stuff. And it scares me. You watch some of these young kids come into new jobs and stuff like that, and I can find out more stuff about them looking them up on Facebook. You know, things that you do not want employers to know. And we have no way to protect people.
Do you, not asking you to talk out of school, but do you guys require, like some colleges are starting to do, do you require, what's, not a Facebook person, isn't there a, if I'm your friend, is there some code you give me to let me get into your friend stuff?
Oh, yeah, you can do that. I guess you can give universities and other organizations a code to see your stuff. I don't know.
Do they require
about
that?
I don't doubt. I would be very surprised. You know, a company I work with does a lot of media stuff, and they're not too concerned about that sort of thing.
Manny, who do we have on here that said a couple of the universities are requiring you to give them your password?
I have no idea. I don't remember that. Requiring to give them your password?
Well, whatever,
I've never heard
whatever,
that in my life.
What's
a friend you or something?
No, what is it? There's a private part to your Facebook. I'm in an area where I know nothing about. But isn't if I go find, suppose I did join Facebook and I went to see Matty Weber, I get to see the first layer. But if I'm a friend of yours, I get to see the second layer. Is that what?
Yeah, or third, something like that. Yep. So yeah, there's different layers of I don't know, visibility to individuals.
Lou was saying that some places were starting to require that you give them the second or third layer because they don't want to be embarrassed by something in there after they hired you.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't surprise me. They do that in a lot of big financial firms. They make sure that, you know, and part of it is a little bit regulatory, or at least they use that excuse.
Right.
You know, if you're going to go be a broker for somebody, they want to make sure that, you know, you don't have all sorts of lewd pictures up there that the media or somebody can come out later and say, hey, look at this guy. He's so immoral and he's selling bonds for Morgan Stanley or somebody else, you know. So
let me get this straight. If you have a picture of your tush on Facebook, it means you're less of an honest bond trader?
Wow. We really took that far.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I didn't say that. I just, you know, who knows what people do. Knows,
but I, you know, I've actually talked to my favorite one to ask the question, though, Steph, now that you got me on the subject, is do you know that the Illinois Tollway Commission has put whatever you want to, what do you call a tower that grabs the thing, Maddie?
You mean your license plate or the?
No, the
RFID thing.
Yeah, you can put those towers. I mean, if you hold your thing up, I do because I don't have it stuck on the windshield. I hold it up when I go through the thing and toll. But I guess I don't really have to do that.
It'll drive past, yeah.
If you just drive past, it'll pick it up 90% of the time, even if it's in the glove compartment, right?
Yes.
Okay, so. Evidently, they've put some of those towers up, not on the tollway.
Interesting.
And they've decided, with the excuse that if all of a sudden Matty Weber gives the traffic and there's a huge crash, their excuse is they want to know where people like you and I go instead of going on a tollway.
Interesting.
You know, what our alternate routes would be.
Got it.
Now, if anybody believes that for a nanosecond, like they really care about that, they're obviously giving somebody money to put the tower up, and somebody cares where we go. I don't know who the somebody is.
Yeah. Come on. You're concerned about that. You shouldn't worry about that. You're your phone tracks you everywhere you go. You know, you use Google Maps or you use directions for any of these. They know exactly where you turn left, and they tell you instead to turn right. They know you made a left instead of a right. I mean, so, you know, we are tracked constantly by our phones and don't even think about it. So the fact that those individuals put the towers up, got it. You know, but we should really be worried about a lot of the other data we give out for free without worrying.
Well,
about
but that. But that data has been used in a lot of divorce stuff.
I believe that, yeah, because as an attorney, you just put in a warrant to, or not a warrant, a request for information. I forgot what the right terminology is. Escaping me. And you can get that information and see, hey, you know what? Every day when he says he's out with his buddies, he's actually, you know, three blocks away from her house.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, I guess the part about the Google, to a certain extent, we've done that to ourselves. But then again, there's no alternative. I mean, if there really ought to be.
We can go back to remembering how to go places.
Well, but I'm saying, I could accuse you of doing that to yourself.
Yep.
If there was another program, you know, Matt Weber MapQuest that promises to get rid of all that information a second afterward.
Call it MapQuest.
MapQuest, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, but there isn't. I mean, you're either using Google or you're not.
Yeah, there is. Although, you know, there's legislation in Europe that allows you to start deleting a lot of your data from these things. So permanently delete it. And a lot of that legislation should be hopefully coming here soon, so we have a lot more control over our own data.
I'm gonna say that I have 30 seconds. I'm gonna say that when the tollway put this stuff up, that in the law was something like 60 days they got rid of it, because you're paying in advance. There's no reason for them to keep it.
Right.
And I'm gonna say they just don't dump it. They tell you they're gonna do it, they just don't. That's the Futures Down 8. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks. Mr. John Neal, talk about some stocks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTI PTIsecurities.com, or feel free to email me at john@PTIsecurities.com. That's JOHN@PTIsecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
Lord Winpeck, Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Alish. She's Stephanie Coney. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. Mr. Chan Neal in a minute. S&P futures down 750. Dow futures down 116. NASDAQ futures down 25. So we've been down pretty much most of the morning, right about here. Oil up 12 cents, 67.66. So up a little bit, but it was up yesterday morning and then was down the whole rest of the day. 10-year yield, 2.95. It's creeping. It's getting there. One fingernail at a time, Stephanie. It's already 3%. We'll see if it makes it and stays there this time. It was 3%. 6 months ago, and for like 2 days, it came right back down. DAX down 94 now, 0.8%. These guys are selling awful, but FTSE down 49.7. They were not as low earlier as we did the report. CAC around down 27. That's 0.5%. They're only down 2%, 0.2% earlier. Asia, however, hasn't changed because they're closed. Nikkei with a big rally, 291, 1.3%, 22,664. Shanghai down, call it 5.2%, 26,64. Hang Seng down again, 190.7%. These guys are really getting whacked. 26,422. There's no doubt that if you look at the two markets, the Chinese market's been impacted by a lot of what's going on in the world. I'm not so sure it's the trade negotiations or if it's just, you know, just bad economy over there or bad third world stuff. Say oil up 12 cents, Brent up 40 cents. So that spread is now $10.11, which I would never have guessed. Yeah. Natural gas, 2.79. Arbob gas, 1.98. Gold is down a buck, 1198. Silver down 2 cents. The only thing that might help these guys, we get a hot CPI number. Copper, this is the, Stephanie, you guys, I mean, in your career, I'm sure you've heard of people who look at this copper number as definitely the harbinger of what's going on in the third world and in China. And at 261, those people got to be thinking that it's bad over there because that's about as low as I've seen in a while.
It means they're not building much.
Yeah, it really does. Benny, we got for us Trevi Weather Sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Still looking relatively good on the area expressways. No accidents or issues on the Edens or Kennedy. High traffic volumes on the Eisenhower, but no accidents. Same with the Stevenson. Southside Expressway is looking good. Everything else nice and quiet out there. Not sure why, but everything off to a good start. So that's great news. Weather today, more great news. Partly cloudy skies, beautiful. A high of 77. Right now it's sunny and 61 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny with a high of 107 today. Right now it's clear and 81. In sports, Cubs, their lead in the Central is down to one game over the Brewers and 3.5 over the Cardinals as both of those teams won. Milwaukee topping the Cubs 3-2 last night at Wrigley. White Sox lost to the Royals 4-3. Diamondbacks were blown out by the Rockies 13-2. Monday Night Football doubleheader last night, a couple of blowouts. Jets all over the Lions in Detroit, 48-17. Rams went on the road to Oakland and blew out the Raiders, 33-13. Chief.
But I think the Raiders are still in a little sticker shock.
Sticker shock from what?
The trade to the Bears.
Well, I think it was a terrible trade for the Raiders, and I don't know what they're doing. I wouldn't be surprised if Gruden runs them into the ground in 2 or 3 years.
What do you think the Stefan, feel free to, or John, feel free to pile in on this. What do you, given the timing, okay, the timing as I know it, Gruden, who, and I'll lob this one out there, when you're a coach that can command a lot of money, not saying he's a great coach, not a great coach, but when you have a coach that can sort of pick your spot, you sort of want to be in a situation where a team had, 10 bid injuries the year before and you got 12 draft picks that are piled up, so even an orangutan would can turn that around from 3-13 to even 8-8 or something. So you're going to be a genius no matter what. So Gruden gets there, and I'm thinking he wants to win pretty much right away. But he goes to a team that is 2 years away from making the big splash in their new stadium, and somehow or another, they trade their best player for 2 number one picks that are a year and 2 years down the road. So it almost seems, I don't know what the rest of their lineup looks like and how many draft picks they have stacked up, Manny, but it almost looks like they've got a year to two time horizon, which would sort of match the stadium. I don't know that it necessarily matches the coach. What do you guys make of all this? It seems a little scrambled to me.
Sounds like they're rebuilding to me.
But why would Gruden take a rebuilding job? He could do that. He could have done that.
Because I think he is pretty much in charge.
Okay.
And, they offered him a ton of money, too much to turn down. I think that's why. So his first big splash is trading their best player for 2 first-round picks, but then giving the second-round pick back. And if the Bears make the playoffs a couple of times, like they think they will, and the Raiders are really bad, then all of a sudden those 2 first-round picks don't look quite as attractive, and that second-round pick looks almost as good.
Right.
I don't know. The timing of it seems a little fishy. They chose to give a ton of money to their quarterback, and they really couldn't invest that type of money to just 2 guys with how strict the NFL salary cap is. So what Khalil Mack was asking for and what the Bears gave him, coupled with what they're paying Derek Carr, would have been like 25-30% of their whole team's salary cap with 2 guys. And that's why they knew they had to get rid of one of them, or at least they made the decision to get rid of one of them.
The Bears structure this so they were paying nobody this year, so they could absorb most of it, or the next 4 years is going to be an excuse why they can't sign out other guys?
Well, the Bears are in a unique perspective in that most of your money goes to your quarterback in the NFL. But the Bears have a quarterback that's under a rookie contract. So they know that they have a 3 or 4 year window before they have to pay Mitch if Mitch pans out and turns into a really good player, which jury's still out. So it made sense for them financially to invest a bunch of money in their defense, which they have, by signing Khalil Mack. They signed Eddie Goldman to a long-term deal. They signed Hakeem Nicks to a long-term deal. They gave that money to Fuller in the offseason. And they're kind of going all in here for like a 3-year window to try and, make the playoffs and potentially compete for a Super Bowl before they have to decide on either paying Mitch Trubisky or, going through another rebuild. And that's kind of the way it works. Unless you are the Patriots and you can get your star quarterback to take pay cuts every couple of years because you make so much money on the side, it's really tough to, the Packers are going to run into that. They just gave Aaron Rodgers contract.
Maybe they have to make Mitch Trubisky marry somebody like Steph that makes all kinds of money and has to worry about it.
Yeah. Right. Tom Brady married Giselle, and she makes probably more than he does.
She does.
And so
Stephanie, Janelle, Giselle, what's the difference, right?
Oh, I wish that was the conflict.
So that they do have... So even though other people might have wanted him, the Bears are really the only one that could have pulled this off.
Well, there's a few teams, but it made sense for the Bears. And then Khalil Mack gets to go to a major market and be the face of a city that loves defense. And so he was probably excited to come here too.
Well, what's the is Oakland an orphan team next year, or are they playing at UNLV? I mean, originally
I'm going to have to do some research on that. I'm not sure.
Jen, they were thinking about... San Diego, because San Diego's got an empty stadium, right? Because they're in LA now. So I still can't get used to that one. The LA went from a city was happy with no teams to having 2 teams, which is odd. Anyway, is Oakland the most traveled team around or what? It seems like they are. So, John, what do you make of...
It's got to be, Tom.
What do you make of what's going on in the market? We're down a little bit today. We could have used this yesterday. Didn't get it. But yet, I don't know. We never seem. People are more worried about getting caught short than they are getting caught long. Let's put it that way.
Right. Well, now it seems like we're almost in that set of two steps forward, one step back, one step forward, two steps back right now. So,
well, we've got what the Amazon has lost after they made the $1 trillion number. They've essentially gave away $50 billion back, right? They're 950 now.
Yep, and I saw somebody upgrade them. What was it? I want to say something like $750 more than where it's at right now. So could be some potential there once you take the bounce.
Well, let me help you, Jen.
If
you write your name on national TV, you need to figure out where that guy is, and you got to go like another 100 hours higher.
Right. You
can blow it out of the water.
Yeah, just blow it out of the water. Either one of you... I'm going to say somewhat fundamental analysis people. I think both of you are. I read something Friday that gave me pause because, I mean, Amazon is worth more than, like, the next 21 retail places, including Walmart. And yet Walmart...
Combined.
And yet Walmart is worth or does three times the gross sales, just Walmart.
Wow.
Does that... I mean, it doesn't mean they make profit on it. It doesn't mean anything. They could be selling stuff... you know, for $80, it cost them $79. I mean, I don't know. But still, does that... To me, I read that, I'm going, wow, it's... Something really has to... This Amazon, whether it really better do something in the next few years, or some of these other guys better fold, because I don't see that number being like that 5 years from now. I mean...
Especially because a lot of those, like, the retail industry is coming back, like, so the Targets and the Walmarts and stuff, you know, are doing a lot better in terms of sales, like, direct store sales, because now they're implementing processes like I can order online a whole bunch of stuff and go pick it up and they'll bring it down to my car. So, you know, instead of waiting for that 24-hour period or whatever for Amazon to show up, you just put it in online and you go down there and you get it 2 hours later. And or they'll deliver it from the actual stores to your house. So that's making a big impact in the retail world. And we're going to see, it's going to be interesting to see how what this trend does.
How do we go, since you started this, how do we go from, John, I'm going to say a year ago, nobody in the world, nobody who, except for a Luddite like me, would ever be caught dead going to Target when you can become an Amazon Prime, order the stuff, and you're tripping it over it, you know, tripping over the toilet paper that was delivered going out your front door 4 hours later. How do we go from no idiot will ever go to a store again a year ago to now these guys are all back? You know,
right.
obviously they've got some new stuff, like you're saying. Now, how do you go from going out of business to being back and stock running up? How does this shift take place, or was it never there in the first place? Was it all hype? I mean, it seems odd.
I think part of it, you know, was hype, and I think I always thought there was going to be, you know, certain kind of a space for both of them, if you will. I think a good example would be like your hardware store. Well, a lot of that stuff you can order. You know, online through Amazon, things like that. But, you know, with that being said, you know, you can go into your major hardware store's online site. You can place an order, just like Steph said there. And then when you get there, it's ready for you. They have it all picked. And it's ready for you to pick up. So even like some of the contractors are doing things like that. And, you know, I mean, you're not going to have a whole contractor order, you know, come through Amazon, you know. So... I think there's room for both.
Yeah, they're saying retail sales in terms of clothing are coming back too. People are tired of trying to, you know, buy two sizes, try one on at home, and then go through the hassle of trying to send it back. So, I don't know. It's interesting. To your question though about whether it's was just a trend. I mean, hey, I think we live in a world where there's a lot of faddy things that go on. I mean, by like fads. And, using Amazon Prime was cool. It was cool. It was kind of fun. I mean, it is fun to show up at home and have all these kind of presents, right, that are there, you know, stuff you paid for. but at the same point, you know, when I want something, I want it kind of when I want it. And if I'm, to your point about a home project, I don't want to have to wait for 24 hours to get that screw so I can finish this project on the weekend. I'm going to go over to something local, pick it up.
And that's exactly it. I mean, I just think there's certain things that would be very, will never be conducive, you know, for online sales, like you point out, Steph. And then, you know, I mean, people are going to want to look at their clothes, try on their clothes, certain things that you're, at least from my experience with shopping, that, you know, like clothing, I want to be able to try it on, and, you know, looks on me, so on and so forth, a pair of shoes, so on. Now, if it's a book, who cares? They're all going to be the same, whether you buy it online or in the store. You know, so that's one of the reasons, we've had what's happened, with the book industry. That one makes sense, or when we had CDs with music and things like that.
What percentage?
Hardware and things like that, different story.
What percentage, since both of you guys seem to know more about this than me, what percentage of, let's say, Target's resurgence has been because they're doing some stuff online and getting somewhat of this blend versus they were never dead in the beginning, or people just like to go to the stores, you know, for like back to school and those kinds of things, because the kids have to try stuff on. And we had, for a while, we had a young lady who was our assistant producer, Girl Maddie, M-A-D-D-I-E, and her roommate was, now in Chicago, when you have people who don't have a car, I think this is a little different world. Her roommate, Steph, was a mistress, not a master, a mistress at, if she wanted a pair of shoes, even athletic shoes, she'd see the one she'd like and she'd order three sizes. See the ones that pick and immediately send the other two back. Now,
Jill did that yesterday with, skirts. I was like, why did you get two of the same skirts? She's like, oh, I got two different sizes. I'll just send the other one back.
How could Jill not know her size? She's like a size one for
you. She says they're different. Every company or every brand is different.
Yeah, women's sizes are not standard. You have to try it on. They make them all different sizes, no matter. The six for one store is not a six for another. A 10 for one store is not the same as another. You usually end up in your closet with a range from, two to three different sizes.
Now, so for a guy, if your old pants, whatever size they were, don't fit anymore, it means that all the old pants the same size don't fit anymore.
It's you, it's not the pants.
It's you, it's not the pants. Yeah.
32 waist, 30 inseam.
Yeah, 32 waist. Yeah, we're not even there. Although I will say this, I have a couple of different, maybe three different sizes tuxedo. I started out at a 42. Let's just say that ship has sailed. I think I was 205 pounds. I look good in that one, though. I'd say I look the best in that one, though, Steph. The new one's not so hot. But, I got to believe that people like to do both. And now they've had these huge run-up. Now, does that mean they're buys here, or are we reaching equilibrium, or what are we? I actually have had a couple of when you do online shopping for me, I've done very well in my construction stuff, believe it or not, where I actually would want a very high-end screw for, like, if you're doing decking and you want stainless steel and so forth. If you want to get yourself eviscerated, go buy those at Menards or Home Depot. And you can get them a third of the price online, direct from the manufacturer. I mean, it's not even close. Third to a half. I mean, if you want to buy a big bucket of them, I mean, I'm going to say the bucket, that big bucket of screws that Salvador was using, Maddie, it was $260. It's like $500 for people. Because they're all stainless steel. They're going to last, four. There's different grades of stainless steel, I found out, and these are like the best you could buy. And, because I don't want, we got good stuff. I don't want it to look lousy. So, I mean, that, you can definitely, cherry pick the stuff online. I mean, I can't imagine buying, your lumber online and, trusting those guys to pick it out. We talk about, It's got to be harder than buying skirts, buying lumber, because if there's 30 of them there, you'd be lucky if you want 15 of them, right, Maddie? Yeah. I mean,
they just send you a pallet and you don't even look.
Yeah, you don't even look.
Yeah, you got to eyeball every one of them.
Oh, yeah, you got to eyeball every one of them. So, I mean, I don't know, where do you think this is it all just going to land? If you're in New York or Central Chicago, you're going to use your Prime. Why should you get an Uber to go get paper towels when somebody's willing to deliver them? I get that part. But if you're out driving around, it's easier to, but I've had, I went to Walmart, this huge Walmart out in Hodgkins, trying to get some headlights for my truck. So I go headlights. And, of course, three or four places do better than Amazon and headlights. The Pep Boys and Walmart. Well, there's a Walmart right on the way. So I said, all right, I order them. And I figure I'll stop there. I'll grab the headlights. So I pull in. And, of course, this is your worst. I don't know if you were, I was going to say somebody old, but if you were incapacitated in any regard, Steph, Jan, you walk in the door, and this Walmart, I'm going to say if you ran a lap around it, it had to be a mile. It's one of those kind of places.
Oh, jeez.
So they say online pickup. They bring you right down this huge main aisle where there's a million things, hanging out there, all the candy specials, everything that you would be in the, what do they call it, the...
those impulse buys.
Impulse, very good. So then you get to the end of it, and they say, okay, go this way, turn right. They made me circle, because I was an idiot, they made me circle the entire store, and it couldn't have been 30 feet from the door I came in at.
Yeah, they put you in that maze.
Yeah, they made me, I literally walked a half a mile to get to where it was, and guess what? They didn't have any. And they never emailed me back, so I got skunked there as well. They said, well, we'll give you these instead for cheaper. Well, of course you will. They're not the ones I want. They are cheaper. Oh. Anyway, it didn't work out so hot. I think it was their first day they were doing it, actually.
Yeah. So Target's making a bunch of smaller stores, like not their big, huge ones. They're creating a bunch of smaller stores around universities and in urban areas because people don't really like the big warehouse feel. I mean, it's fine if you got 2 hours to waste, but it's really tough if you kind of want to jump in and come out.
Well, the Target, John, you're not as big on Chicago geography. There's a pretty good-sized Target out, like I said, in this big shopping center in Hodgkins. So I was talking to the guy out there, and I go, so how big are you guys as Target stores go? He goes, well, we're actually a pretty good size. We do a semi and a half a day, he goes, which puts us in some of the top tier. I said, what about the one in Chicago on Elston? I said, that place seems like it's, I mean, you can actually get into a fight in the parking lot there over parking spots. I mean, it's very Hispanic, very, I mean, anybody, but the place is mopped. He goes, oh, that one? They're 4.5 semis a day. He goes, if they have a special on like Tide, they can't keep it in the aisle. It looks like a Russian supermarket at the end of the day because people will buy, you know, thousands of things of Tide.
Wow.
I mean, he goes, that store is like the number one. Well, Home Depot on North Avenue was the largest one on the chain for a long time too. They built the one in Elston.
I didn't realize that.
Well, for a while they had the hookers out front.
Oh, is that why?
Well, I don't think that was why. But talk about Chicago history. What was there before Home Depot, Manny?
You said this before, but I can't remember.
It's a Procter & Gamble plant.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, and that's when that's when North Avenue was huge on hookers forever, up until really about 5-6 years ago. And the reason for that was because of the Procter & Gamble plant. Well, they hung in there while the home...
Not that you noticed.
Yeah. Well, I mean, with Dr. J and I, when we did the show, we used to start at 5 o'clock. And we'd go in, and we'd always be propositioned, especially in the summertime. We had the windows open. And there'd be three or four ladies walking along. And then finally, one day, there weren't any. I don't know, they finally got rid of everybody. I think they started. But the Home Depot was 24 hours.
Yeah, it's not anymore.
No, so, honey, I got to go to the Home Depot at 2 in the morning. You wouldn't believe the deals they got at plasterboard. Anyway, so now they close, what, midnight to 5 or something? Maybe, I don't know, something
like that. I think they're actually closed at 9.
Okay, yeah, for a while. But they were 24 hours for a while. And while all the hookers were wandering around the parking lot, which was sort of interesting. But anyway, so, John, we going long or short here? Or what are we doing? What about oil? Oil looks like it's dead. Gold, I think we're getting, as bad as it's been, I think we're going to get a hot CPI number, if not this month, next month. And we're going to see a little goose in the behind on gold. That's my prediction.
Well, right. And then it's pulled back to its lows again. Probably going to base here. Same with oil as far as that goes. But I think that, you know, both meander up, but, you know, going forward here in next week or two or whatever.
Well, what are you, Steph, not asking you to talk out of school with your guys. There's been a lot of analysts now that have come out and said that we definitely want to hang in there on oil. And I hope this doesn't happen, but we're September. They're talking $85, $90 oil by the end of the year because Venezuela doesn't come back online. If Iran continues to lose capacity, which maybe they aren't because I think some people are in Europe are buying stuff from them. But if they were to lose capacity like these guys think, they go, there really isn't much excess right now that you could see $85, $90 oil at the end of the year, at least in a spike. What do you guys think of that? Is that possible? I mean, I, for our position, I'd love to see it. For my truck, I wouldn't love to see it, and probably I don't really want to see higher gas prices, but I wouldn't mind seeing the XLE up $3 or $4, but not 30. 3 or 4 is fine. What do you guys think? Is that a possibility?
My personal position would appreciate it going up, but I don't know. You know, they just had the Russian, Turkey, and Merkel talked, and with Iran, and I guess this was actually, Russia, Turkey, and Iran that spoke, and so I think they're negotiating how they're going to get oil out of there. I'm wondering how that's going to impact the market, and I'm just not really sure where we're going to go from there at this point.
We only have 90 seconds, but I'm going to lob one out and just see what you guys think of it. I read some article regarding if Trump's there for 8 years or somebody with the same view of the world, that in 15 years you'll see Russia with a lot more influence, maybe even in Lithuania and Latvia. You'll see the Chinese great dominance on the West China Sea there. We're abdicating our leadership role.
Yep.
And a lot of people, I think, really don't have a problem with that. But what do you guys think of that? I don't know what to think of it. I think it's probably not a good idea, but I don't. How do you base an opinion?
But why would we want to be subservient to other groups?
I'm with you. I'm just saying I'm sure the people who were isolationists before World War One and World War Two thought they were right too.
I don't see that happening, Tom, and I don't see him getting reelected either. So I don't see either scenario happening.
Well, okay, all right, John. We'll talk to you Friday. Your team not so good.
No, look pretty poor. Or both of my teams looked somewhat poor.
ASU spanked.
We'll see what happens though.
You guys beat the Spartans?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, ASU looked great.
Yeah.
No question there.
All right, John, thank you very much. SP Futures down 750, Dow Futures down 114, NASDAQ Futures down 22. Stephanie, thank you very much. Maddie, good job. And have a nice time. And where
thank
are you going?
You.
In New York?
Brooklyn, Manhattan, we're going everywhere.
Hopefully you hook up with Kenny. It should be fun. We'll be back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.